So one of the ways to help us clarify for our brain is to actually pretty much look at your to-do list, look at your to-do list, and then circle the one thing that's going to make everything else either easier or unnecessary. So circle that one thing that's going to make everything else on that list easier, or in some cases, unnecessary, and then move everything else over to the not to-do list. And then that's just the one thing that you're focused on getting done.
One small step for man.
Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
We choose to go to the moon, not because they are easy, but because they are
hard. I have a dream.
You can't handle the truth.
7.
6.
5.
4.
3.
2.
1.
Super, 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 super.
Super you.
Welcome back to the Super You Podcast. It's the podcast designed to unlock and unleash your inner superpower. I'm Jake with Equalman Studios. Welcome to the show. Equalman was recently featured on What the M, a new podcast that discusses the complex issues facing default services and the path forward for the mortgage industry and homeowners alike. And now we're reposting that episode here on the Super You Podcast. What the M unveils how mortgage servicers manage the residential homeownership industry. Eric stopped by to discuss his book, The Focus Project, and how it can help readers, lawyers, and anyone else who struggles with prioritizing their to-do list. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoy this episode of the Super You Podcast.
So the theme of our show today is focus, and we have a great guest with us today who wrote a book on focus called The Focus Project. And as attorneys and, you know, managers, anybody in the industry or individuals, you know, we always are getting pulled in countless directions from a lawyer standpoint, clients' needs, firm management needs, court docket, calendar. I mean, it's we're tied to the calendar, and all of that's before you even begin to start thinking about the kids at home. And so this is a very poignant topic, and I'm very excited about our guest today. Steve, you want to do an introduction?
Absolutely. And welcome. Our guest today is a number one best-selling author and keynote speaker. He has performed in over 55 countries and reached over 50 million people this decade. He was voted the second most likable author in the world behind the Harry Potter series. His work has been used by the National Guard to NBC Universal to NASA. He is the inventor of the best-selling family board game Kitty Corn. Most importantly, he's still trying to live up to the title World's Greatest Dad coffee mug that he received from his wife and two daughters. So please welcome to the show, Eric Qualman. Thank you so much for being here. We truly appreciate it.
No, it's great being here and Fly Eagles Fly, because if they win, they get to come to Detroit to play my Lions. And it hasn't been many. It's been 32 years since I've been able to say that in a playoff game. So that'll be fun if that comes to fruition with the Lions versus the Eagles.
I hope so. I'll tell you what, that Lions game last night was a lot of fun, and they're a fun team to watch. So
there were definitely some surprising playoff games this year. So for our listeners' sake, the first time I got to see Mr. Qualman speak was at an AFSA conference in San Francisco a number of years ago. This electric, dynamic speaker held my attention for a solid hour, which is nothing short of a miracle. I was telling Steve about who I wanted to have on the show, and he was asking me about you. And basically, I was like struggling a little bit to explain to him what all it is that you do. So tell our listeners about yourself, if you don't mind.
Yeah, real quick is that I've been doing this now 14 years. So that means writing books and speaking on stage and doing edutainment like activities, whether it's board games, whether it's books, whether it's performances, whether it's blogs, podcasts. But I started off in Detroit as an intern at Cadillac and fell quickly into digital before digital was a thing. And then I worked at Yahoo back when it was kind of the Facebook of the day, and then was the head of marketing at Travelzoo, took that from private to public. And so I love tech before it was this big thing. And then I wrote a book called Socialnomics, really telling people that, hey, this thing called MySpace, the social media, which you probably don't know about, but you think it's just a kid's toy, is going to be huge for politics, for business. And so that was the right place, right time. And now I've written 6 books. And I speak on stage around the world and just have done a lot of edutainment pieces, whether it's our animation studio, whether it's the board games. And so anything I do is really about how can I kind of give you a key to unlock your superpower. And so that's the whole thing. I never thought I'd be doing this for a living, but I love it. It's just, if everyone can kind of, they have to do it, right? We can give you the key, but then you have to unlock and then unleash it on the world. What is your strength? What is that superpower? And a lot of that comes down to focus. That's why of the six books, the last one I wrote is called The Focus Project, which is anti-venom for my first book. Socialnomics was saying, get into the technology, got to use this stuff. Then all of a sudden I see people digesting their phone so close to their face, they're almost eating it. It's like, hey, take a step back. It's a balance, Jetsons, Flintstones. It's all about focus on big things versus busy ones.
That's cool. So tell us a little more about the Focus Project and what drove you to write the book.
I always write books based on two things. And someone told me this a long time ago, is that you really write a book for one of two reasons. And sometimes it's both. And it's to change yourself, or number two, to change the world. And so you always start with a reader of one, which is usually you, the author. And so for me, I was going to bed at night and my hair was on fire. And a lot of you, everyone can relate to this because I've talked to enough people over time that you can all relate to this. Your hair is on fire. You're like, not tomorrow. I'm not going to do that tomorrow. I'm going to focus on the big things versus busy ones. All of a sudden, gravitational pull, especially in this hyper-connected digital era. We're running around like chickens with our heads cut off. So that's where it started. I was like, wait, I own this company. If I've got a problem with this, let me start asking people. And I started asking people like, yeah, I've got the same issue. Then I started talking to successful people. I go, what is it that you do well better than most people? And they go, focus. I go, what's your biggest challenge every day? They're like, remaining focused. And so I go, aha, let's do some research. This isn't a new thing that's happened. So it's been happening for thousands of years, how to focus on big. But the difference is from my tech background is now it's even harder with all this technology out there to focus. And so that's what I want to do is a one-year project. But focus is so hard, it became a two-year project to where I was testing research that's quote-unquote institutional research that's been around for thousands of years. And then also street science, testing it myself, what works, what doesn't work. And so that's why it became a project that did turn into a book.
So one of the things that really spoke to me, and I listened to your book, I must confess, I listened to it on my Audible account, and I crammed it into like the last 8 or 9 days, and I'm going to really have to go back and try to redigest because there's a lot of information there. But the as lawyers, we're always, again, getting pulled in 20 directions, and the section about multitasking versus switch tasking. When you, I was listening to that, I was in the Starbucks line ordering coffee. I just left Costco. I was trying to go through the Costco list to make sure I had everything. At the same time, I was trying to decide what I was going to fix for supper. And you talked about multitasking versus switch tasking. It was kind of like a punch in the nose. But anyway, tell our listeners a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think even with your Costco story, we've all been there. I think we have it in the book and the Focus Project is I went to the supermarket and I needed to get three things and I wound up coming home with one of them. Like, that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It's because your mind's racing. You're not living in the moment. You're trying to do 1,000 things. So here's the deal is a lot of us multitasking. The reason we do it is because we want to get ahead of the competition. We want to beat Father Time, even though Father Time's undefeated. We want to wring more out of our 24-hour day. So all good things on why we want to quote-unquote, air quotes, multitask. And the reason I'm using air quotes is because we as human beings really can't multitask. We can't do two cognitive tasks at once. So if I'm sitting on this podcast doing this interview while I'm trying to write an email in between questions, that's a bad no-no. We can't do that because our brain's switching tasks. And so we're doing the exact opposite of what we're trying to achieve. Most of us are multitasking so we can get more done during the day. Ironically, because it's switch tasking, our brain's trying to figure out what's more important, A or B, or A or B. And that moment of switching, our IQ can drop up to 15 points. And my dad's always quick to point out, he's like, son, you definitely can't afford to lose 15 points. That's a high percent. But that's the equivalent of not sleeping for 36 hours, or as teams, especially if you have like legal teams, your productivity can decrease by up to 40%. So we've got to remind ourselves that actually I'm getting more done when I single task, single task, single task. Now, what I call good tasking is that if you're using two different parts of your brain. So if you're on a conference call and want to go for a walk in the woods, do it. That's really good. That's really good for you. You're getting exercise. You're doing the conference call. Perfectly fine, as long as it's not too loud. That's what I call good tasking, because you're using two different parts of your brain. One's more physical, manual. The other one's more cognitive. So you can fold laundry while you're on that call as well, whatever you want to do. But what you want to avoid is what most of us do, is what we call multitasking, is trying to do two cognitive tasks at once. And just remind yourself, you're getting less done, and it's actually unhealthy for you to do that.
I used to get into these bloodbath arguments with my teenagers over multitasking. And I remember listening to a story about actual doing positron emission tomography over people's brains and how they simply can't do two things at once. You're doing this, or you're doing that. And of course, you know, now they're all grown and they still don't believe me. So,
well, we won't do it. It's a physical exercise, but I've got an exercise that'll prove that they can't do it. So, but it's more of a physical writing exercise, which wouldn't go over well on the air here, but if you need it, I'll send it to you.
Yeah, I would love that.
Love to see it. So, well, let's shift a little bit to a different type of topic, which is the art of saying no. As lawyers, we have clients all the time pushing, can you do this? Can you do this? And pushing that envelope further and further. And it's your client. And it can be real hard to say no sometimes. We have staff. We have all kinds of staff asking for things. And it can be real hard to say no to good staff or even staff that isn't performing so well. And same at home, same with charitable, same with community events. Mm-hmm. Everyone's asking you. So how do you perform the art of saying no?
Exactly. And it's the how. It's, you got to have a system and process in place, because willpower will let you down each and every time. So willpower only lasts for a little while. That's why by day 7, 92% of us break our New Year's resolutions, because we're relying on willpower, not having a system or a process in place. And when I talk to successful people, they're better at focusing than people that are not as deemed successful in society. And it's not something they're born with, but what they do better than most is they say no to the small things so they can say yes to the big ones. Now, a lot of you listeners out there like me, you're people pleasers. That usually helps. It helps you for thousands of years assimilate with the tribe. Most of the time, that's really good. But you've got to realize this. If you're a people pleaser like me, if you say yes to everyone, you're saying no to everyone, meaning you're going to do a pretty bad job if you're saying yes to everything. So if you say yes to the church that you're volunteering, if you say yes to the client, say yes to this other item out there, is it basically you're saying no to everyone. So you got to remember that. That helps me a lot. I go, if I say yes to everyone, I'm really saying no to everyone, because I'm going to do a pretty bad job. Or I might have to cancel, and that's even worse. Last minute, I'm going to have to cancel with this person. So that helps me get to that. The other thing mentally that helps me is, if you think about yourself like a surgeon. So surgeons, by law, are limited to how much they can operate. They want to save every life, right? If it's given their opportunity, most surgeons, I want to save every possible life. But at a point, when they get tired, when they're working too many hours, they become detrimental to that patient. So that's why they have those guardrails, those processes, and those systems in place to protect them and the patient. And so you've got to think about yourself like a surgeon. And also, it helps me get perspective that most of the things I'm saying yes and no to are not life-saving situations like the surgeon. So when you put it in that perspective, it really helps you with the framework of, okay, it's actually good that I do say no to most things, because that allowed me to say yes to the big ones. It's actually not only helping myself, but it's actually helping everybody. And so when you have that framework, that's really helpful to know. And also, a quick no is better than a long no. Meaning, if someone asks you, hey, can you help us out at this basketball game? Can you work the clock on the basketball game at this charitable basketball game coming up? And you're like debating. If it's not an immediate yes, it should be immediate no. Meaning, if someone says they got two Super Bowl tickets, you want to go, yes, emphatic yes. If it's, hey, do you want to come to this networking event on Friday? Wow, man, that'd probably be good for me. That should be an immediate no. So that's another system you can use. If it's not an emphatic yes, it should be an emphatic no. And quick no's are better than long no's, meaning that if that clock situation, I said, I should be, let me check back with you. Now that person's like waiting days. And then you eventually get back and say no. That's worse for that person than the quick no. Or if it's a prospect, that's like, hey, or someone's reaching out to you from a sales side, hey, do you want to buy our product? A quick no is a lot better for that person than a 2-week no. Because then they can move on to the next prospect. Like, okay, this person has no interest. Let me move on. So again, a lot of it comes down to our people-pleasing framework to remind ourselves, if I say yes to everyone, I'm saying no to everyone. If it's not an emphatic yes, it should be an emphatic no. And then also just understand that a quick no is better than a long no.
So another thing that particularly spoke to me that I am trying to implement, and hopefully beyond 7 days from now, I'll still be doing it, was the not to do list. And, you know, I sit down every day and I write out the 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 things that absolutely have to happen, and knowing I'm only going to get the 3 of them. And the concept of the not to do list just spoke to me. But, you know, for a listener to say, why do you see that as important for focus?
Yeah, it's important because we don't know this, but if you write like I did for years, is I write down this long list, and then it just gets longer and longer because you're adding stuff to it, and you're probably not ticking off as many things as you're adding. That's just all of us. And just as a side note, if I gave everyone 48 hours today, you still wouldn't get everything done. So that's the other thing to understand. Don't trick yourself into thinking I'm eventually going to beat the game and have everything done. You're not. So just remember that. So it's like, how do I focus on those big ones? So the not to do list really helps. And so this is what you should do. So I would, over the years, just write down to do, gets longer and longer. And let's say we're having a good day and I'm focused on number one, which normally is not the case. Most of the time you're focused on the immediate rather than important. But let's say we're having a good day, we're focused on number one. Unbeknownst to me, my brain's actually thinking about item number 37 on that list. So one of the ways to help us clarify for our brain is to actually pretty much look at your to-do list, look at your to-do list, and then circle the one thing that's going to make everything else either easier or unnecessary. So circle that one thing that's going to make everything else on that list easier or in some cases unnecessary. So circle that and then move everything else over to the not to-do list. And then that's just the one thing that you're focused on getting done. So what I just said, even if you just do it in theory, don't throw away your list. Just get in the mindset of doing that. It's very helpful. Just getting the mindset of being able to do that is super helpful. And understand the easiest way to get something done is to actually decide not to do it at all.
That is a choice. And I actually really appreciated your answer because I, like Kent, sit down and I write down that 6 things every day.
Yeah.
But it was good to hear because I circle like 1 or 2. I'm like, okay, I have to get these 2 items done today. Like I just had to finish an answer for a client today. And I crossed that one off. So I felt good about it. So
that's good. Yeah. It gives you a dopamine hit when you cross it off too. So I'm a crosser offer. It's like, yeah, you're done. See you later. Boom. Cross it off. Some people are box checkers, but a lot of us are just like that cross off. There you go.
That feels good when you do that.
Yeah. And then like you said, if you tackle it early in the day, then you're playing with house money. If you get that, the 1 or 2 things you know you need to get done, you get those done early. The rest of the day, you're playing with house money.
All right. Let's talk about a little different topic. A lack of time or a lack of resources isn't necessarily our issue. It's a lack of priority. So talk a little bit about that, prioritizing.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it earlier on this call, is that as lawyers, you've got people pulling at you 24/7, both for business, personal. But we're all good at really prioritizing in a moment. And here's why we know this, is because if everyone's listening, if something happened to your mom, if something happened to your kid, what happens? You drop everything. And it's 100% hyper-focused on that situation and on that person. So we all have that capability. And sometimes you have to think that framework to really understand, oh, in that moment, it crystallizes and like everything's, it's so easy for me to say no to everything because that's the biggest thing in that moment. And so I explain that because we have that capability. And then also you've got to remember if you're having that day where everything's pulled in a million directions, it helps me. It seems kind of crazy, but to think through that scenario that, oh, this is a great day. Like all this stuff is like tiny stuff compared to anything big that could happen, an illness, sickness, or something that was really negative to someone that you love, is that then that allows you a little more perspective on the kind of day-to-day grind to quickly, all of a sudden that can help you, oh, wait, this is no, 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 no. This is yes, 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 and go from there. And so that's really about that prioritization. And we all pretty much know what is the priority. That's not usually the challenge. The challenge is making sure that we focus tackling that number one thing on the list, because it does, we're fooled. Like, so email, you should never tackle that first thing in the morning. You should have systems set up that highlight, this is the important client, this is my wife, my spouse. These get read in the morning. Everything else, no, because it's not highlighted as an important email. I'm going to batch process that when my brain's tired later. I've got to tackle these more difficult tasks first. That's hard to do because basically you get a dopamine hit. Dopamine makes us feel good. It's what we feel if we're winning at a casino. And so it gives you that feel good moment. And so you actually get a dopamine hit if you take your emails from 50 down to zero. And so that's why that thing is alluring to us. But we've got to understand that that's another system you have in place is, okay, tackle the difficult things first when my brain's the freshest.
So, yeah, it's so easy to sit down and feel like you've accomplished something when you do emails. And you could do emails. I could do emails from 8 to 7 in the evening and leave and realize I had accomplished nothing, like buckshot. So. Another thing that you mentioned in the book and story that you talked about, the Nehemiah story, I'm doing a great work, I can't come down. And that also really spoke to me because there are a lot of times when I'm really drilling down on visioning, on firm planning, on where we're going, and somebody comes in and says, the toilet stopped up. Mm-hmm. Not that a toilet's not important, but you know, there's got to be somebody else in the building that can figure this out. Yeah. But anyway, that story really spoke to me. What made you decide to put that in the book?
I put it in the book for a couple of reasons. One, it really spoke to me as well. Obviously, it's from the Old Testament, but it also shows just this isn't new, like this concept of being able to focus. But you think about Nehemiah building that wall for that city. It was really important for him to build that wall just for a lot of reasons, because it was being pillaged, and it was a symbol that if we do this, then it's the rallying cry for the people here. But most importantly, there's people that didn't want him to build the wall. They're trying to get him to come down from the wall. But he realized he needed to live and stay on that wall and have that conviction. And I thought it was great because, look, we're still wrestling with that today in a day of artificial intelligence. And so that's why I always try to stress to people, it's Jetsons, Flintstones. History repeats itself because no one listens the first time. So we can learn from the Stoics. We can learn from these old books and these old stories and see what they did and how they had the conviction. No, I'm doing a good work here. I'm not going to come down from this wall. And so I always ask people, like, what's your wall that you won't come down from? And so when you identify that, then you've got to realize, okay, unless it's this, or this, it's like basically, no, I'm not coming down. I've got to do this. These other opportunities are good, but I've identified this one as the most important. And so let's crank this out. And then once it's done, then I can come down.
Excellent. Good stuff. Now, the show actually tends to veer off into sports topics a lot.
Oh, thank you.
I understand that you have a very interesting one about Michigan State basketball. Go Big Ten.
Oh, yeah. No, it's great. I was really fortunate to play at Michigan State, but I was a weird story from a standpoint of going from basically the water boy to walk on to scholarship player. And it's one of those stories that reminds you that things in life happen to you. You know, they happen for you, not to you. And so, I mean, I got to Michigan State. I wasn't recruited. I loved basketball in the eighth grade so much. I had like 50 different miniature basketballs in my room. It just smelled like a rubber factory in there, like a Goodyear tire factory. And then I started a Swish magazine even in eighth grade. I loved it. Lived, eat, and breathe basketball. Then I got to Michigan State, and, you know, I'm like 165 pounds, 6'4". No one's recruited me, but I want to be part of the program. So tried out to be the manager. You had to try out there because it's a big program. And was a water boy for a couple of years. And then I realized my last season, I go, wait, I don't have any eligibility after this year. I've had this dream of playing basketball at the college level. This is it. So those dreams, they never go away. They kind of whisper at you around the corner. And I said, you know, who cares? People are going to laugh that I'm going to try to make this team. They only have 13 players on it. But that's what I did, is to occasionally be able to get into practice as a manager. So as a junior, once or twice a year that happened. So it happened that a couple guys were sick, a couple guys were injured. Like, Quammen, we need a practice dummy. Get in there. I'm like, this is my moment to shine. So this is, I got to prove that, like, at this point, now it's 6'7", you know, 215. I'm like, this is my moment to shine. And so I'm doing one of those days, like, every shot was going in, ball was coming my way. I was like, this is it. I've done it. And then all of a sudden, you know, really disaster struck, or really fate struck, is that an elbow hit me in the mouth. And it hit me so hard, I actually had a mouth guard in, but it knocked out three of the teeth that are on the bottom of my mouth. Now, I'd been born with two teeth missing, so I'd had a bridge put in there. So at first, I thought it was just the porcelain bridge teeth, but nope, it had ripped. I quickly realized it ripped two real teeth out as well that was attached to. And so I didn't want to stop playing because this was my moment. So I kind of put them in a towel and a chair on the side of the court, hoping that no one noticed. I was able to play for 15 more minutes. And then at a timeout, the trainer came over and he'd found like the evidence. So he's like, dude, you're out of here. We got to get you to the dentist. And I was still bleeding a little bit. So I won't bore you with that unsuccessful dentist trip. But the next day at practice, Izzo goes, Quammen, I don't know if you're the dumbest guy I know or the toughest guy I know, but I think you're the dumbest guy I know. But that was his way of saying, you know, job well done. And he'd wanted to build that program. This was early on. He wanted to build a program on grit and grind. And so I could have hit 50 more shots that day. That wouldn't have helped me as much as getting my teeth knocked out and continuing to play. So in that moment, as I drove to the dentist, I was literally sitting there, I can't believe this happened to me. What a bad break, literally. And then in looking back the years past, it's the best thing that could have happened to me. It allowed me to eventually make that team and get a scholarship because of that moment of getting my teeth knocked out. So just a reminder to all of us that sometimes when life kicks your teeth in, knocks your teeth out, it's going to help you at some point, probably down the road.
Yeah, it's a great story. It took my score a long, long time to beat yours, I'll tell you that. Any other words of wisdom you learned from Izzo? Because I've always been fascinated by him. He's such a good coach.
Oh, he's awesome.
Seems like a genuinely good man.
Yeah, he's great. I mean, his emotional intelligence is so high. He just loves being around people. He's tough love. So it's great. It's such a gift. You don't realize till you get a little older what a gift that is to have someone that tells you, hey, you're not meeting your standard. Like, you're not getting to your potential. And what you don't see behind the scenes, because the media blows things up because they see him yelling, might grab someone's shirt, is the hours of time that he's putting in with that kid behind the scenes, that he's talking with the parents, he's talking with the player. And so it all comes from a good place. And I think the biggest sign that he's amazing is that he has reunions twice a year, one during a football game and one during the basketball game. People, I mean, it is the biggest reunion of any Division I basketball reunion every year, because people want to come back and be a part of the family, want to build a family. But it's really the transfers that come back that always amaze me. They transferred away from Michigan State, and they come back because that's the part in their life they felt like was family. And Coach Izzo is willing to stick with that kid that transferred out of his program, that he just wants to make sure what's best for that kid. So, yeah, I can't say enough good things about Coach Izzo. He's all about effort. And, yeah, you'll see him bench a person. Yeah, he'll lose a game to bench someone. And they're like, why does he do so well in March? I'm like, because he'll lose a game in February to bench someone that's not going 100%.
Yeah, it speaks volumes.
Did you see the highlight of his son scoring yesterday? That was pretty cool.
That was awesome. Yeah, 5 years he hadn't scored, and then he scored and made the free throw. He got an in one. That was amazing.
So, Eric, this brings us down to the last question, which is my favorite question we ask each guest. But if you had an opportunity with all of your life experience and what you do to sit down with the 20-year-old version of yourself, what advice would you give that young man today?
I tell them not to drink so much at the, in your 20s, but no, nothing good happens after midnight. Like your dad, like, I'm like, oh, I'm turning to my dad now, but no. And then also I worked at Yahoo at the time. So I would say, hey, go across the street for that little company you're using a back product you called Google. Go work for Google and buy as much stock out of them as you can. But no, in all seriousness, I'd probably say, you know, give, embrace, give, like give of yourself, give to others, but also give yourself a break. Give 100%, but then also give yourself a break. So give to others, you know, give others some grace. Also give 100%, but also give yourself a break. And so just try to remember that in the mindset, go all out. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, are you helping people? And then you'll do fine.
Yeah, that's awesome advice. So Eric does keynote speaking at a variety of different companies. I can't recommend Eric highly enough. Additionally, he's got the coolest domain name in the history of mankind. When you take his first initial and last name, it's equalman.com. Thank you so very much for taking the time to be on the podcast with us. Truly appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Pleasure.
No, thank you so much. Go Big Ten. And thank you for having me on. It's been an honor. Thanks to your listeners as well.
Thank you, sir.
So thanks again for listening to today's Super U podcast. Again, it's a podcast designed to unlock and unleash your inner superpower. And if you want to pay it forward, make sure you go post a review for the Super U podcast, because what that will do, it'll allow others that aren't familiar with our podcast to discover it. And hopefully that allows them to unlock and unleash their inner superpower. So that's it for today's show. I'm your host, Equal Man, reminding all of us, it's not what we take from the world, it is what we leave behind.
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Super, 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 super you.